The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Well, good evening, everyone. It's always great to see the Sangha show up in Zoom, and I just felt delight when I saw your faces tonight. I was at the morning sit, and I mentioned then that it was an incredibly foggy start to the morning. When I woke up in the middle of the night, and it was really dense, the street light that's nearby barely penetrated, and even as I was going into the sitting, it was still incredibly thick. Now with a kind of whiter mist. And then I went to work, and I work at home. And at a certain point, I kind of looked up for the computer, and what a day, it was so beautiful, just clear and warm and light breeze, fall smelling in the air. It was just so delightful. So I went outside in the middle of the afternoon to stretch my legs, and I suddenly heard a sound that I hadn't heard for a while, and it was the sound of schoolgirls that had just arrived off the bus, and they were laughing and talking with each other. You know, such an ordinary thing, and yet how marvelous, like, this is the first I've heard something like that in a very long time. So just a time of change, I think, is how I would sum up. So I wanted to tell you about an experience that I had last weekend. It was another very beautiful day on Saturday. And I went to visit an event around here that's called Art in the Orchard. And this was the sixth biennial that took place at this working fruit farm. It's called Park Hill Orchard. It's in East Hampton, Massachusetts, near where I live. And this is a large farm with several fields, apples and pear trees, some nut trees, vegetable gardens with squash and pumpkins. And it happens to be located in a little bit of a valley, and you can see the mountains from this orchard. So the mountains are that we have in this area are called the Holyoke Range, and they're a part of a larger mountain chain called the Metacomet Ridge, and that runs from Southern Connecticut all the way up to north of Massachusetts, just about to the Vermont border. And these this Holyoke Range is like one section of this. There are seven peaks. Compared to the Swiss Alps, it's not that. It's about 9.5 miles long and 2.5 miles wide, and the highest peak around here is 1,100 feet. You could call them maybe foothills, but we call them mountains. Now, the sculpture exhibit was started, 6 biennials ago, 10, 12 years ago, by the owners of this orchard and the owner of a frame shop in East Hampton Town. Frame shop's called Big Red Frame. And it takes place every 2 years during the autumn harvest season. And it's just these various sculptures are displayed along a kind of walking path that wends its way through the orchard. There are about 30 different sculptures, each by, a different sculptor in a wide variety of mediums. So metal and wood and fabric, and there was even something in hay. And there's a sculpture that's sponsored by the Frame Gallery that is the one piece that remains on the location throughout the year. And this is a sculpture I wanted to talk about. I was very taken with it. And I want to just kind of riff off of it a little bit, sort of as a Dharma teaching or as a metaphor for our practice. So the sculpture is, like the name of the shop, a big red frame. And you can see it from the sort of the main part of the orchard, and it's raised a little bit on a hill at the far end of the orchard. And when you look at it from this kind of center, you could say, you know, it's backed up against some trees, and you don't really get much of a view from that perspective. But if you go up to the frame and you go sort of behind it, so to speak, you can then look out through the frame and you can see the orchard, all the people coming and going, and the mountains in the distance. Of course, only one part of the scene is actually within the frame. It all spills out on both sides of the frame. And they have very kindly put some chairs in that spot. And so you can sit. And you can watch the contents of this empty frame. So, you know, we can imagine the frame as sort of a metaphor for, you know, the self. There's a physical structure, like a body, and there's an interior space, like the mind. That space appears full, but of course, it's actually empty. There's nothing there. Like thoughts, that people come and go, they stay, they repeat. We have feelings and opinions about them, we attach to them or not. And the practice is to make ourselves still and sit. We observe the contents of that mind frame, which moves, and we allow it to empty itself without a lot of fuss. And we can begin to realize when we do this long enough that none of this activity interferes with the reality of the emptiness. And all the activity does not actually eliminate the mountains that are in the back. And so we could see the mountains sort of as a metaphor for our Buddha nature. Mountains are there, they're always present. Depending on the day, we may see them or we may not. There may be trees or fog in the way. They can't be contained by the physical body of the frame. They're within the frame, but they're also outside the frame. And we know that there are many possible views of these mountains. So if we lie on the grass, we'll get another view. If we leave the orchard, we can see them from another angle. We could even climb the mountains. And so the mountains are present whether we orient towards them or not. They're not something we can grasp, not something we can achieve. In fact, they're not even any one thing. So beyond this kind of rough metaphor for our practice and our experience, there's some other teachings here. I would say that one of them is the teaching of change and impermanence. So if I go back this weekend, the scene is going to be very much the same, but we know it will be different. Some of the basic structure will continue. The same sculptures will be there. The frame will still be there. But this time, probably the mountains and the leaves are going to be much redder. Many of the leaves will have fallen. It'll be a different cohort of people and children and dogs in the orchard. And if I go back in 2 years, in the same season, exact same time, it may look similar enough so that I might not notice the change, but actually every blade of grass and every apple and every tree will be different. And I will be different too. But I will have a memory that will provide the illusion that there's some kind of thing that endures. Now, some people like to take pictures, And this frame is a big draw for picture taking. And people go there with their partners and their families and their groups, and they stand within the frame and they take a picture of themselves in the frame, or they get behind the frame and they take a picture of the mountains through the frame. And this act of taking this picture freezes the moment, very much like the way our memories freeze our experience of a moment. And so now you can imagine a framed picture of the frame with the view of the people and the mountains. And this sort of becomes the new reality of what's there. Now, in another unknown number of biennials, there'll be a lot more physical decay. The frame has already been rebuilt once, and this will happen again, I'm sure. I will be older. Eventually, I will no longer be around. And in some period of time, even the mountains won't look like those mountains any longer. And so the teaching of old age, sickness, death, or you could say impermanence, is present wherever we choose to look. But in addition to this teaching of impermanence, there's also a teaching of interconnectedness. So we know from the Buddha that we are not separate. Here we can see that the empty frame both separates, right? There's an inside and an outside of the frame. And it also serves to connect the various elements of the environment. Sometimes the only thing we can see in the frame are the mountains. And then the frame can help us to focus and appreciate them better. And yet the people that come and go are also critical to the experience of the frame. And that was my experience. It's true, we could long for only an experience of the mountains, but the life and the energy that came from the people is as much part of the frame as the stillness of the mountains. And similarly, we can see that this identity that we call the self, that is empty, actually serves a connecting function. I have always been used to thinking about this self as something that separates me from other people. But actually, I'm not sure if we'd be able to experience the connection without the self. So that sense of separation is, for me, sort of a critical reason why I came into practice. And there are many reasons why we feel separate from the world and others, right? So some of it is because of our family, our life experience, our upbringing, history, our culture, our language, all of those things. But I think all of us know in our heart, and maybe it's only because of the experience we had as a newborn baby, or maybe it's because we also had experiences of opening over the course of our life, that this separateness really is not so. And if we come into practice with that sort of gut intuition, we begin to start to look for something that's going to provide that feeling of interconnectedness. But there's nothing that can actually provide that feeling of interconnectedness, and so we continue to feel separate. And I think that at bottom, one of the reasons for that is also because we're individuals. This particular frame is not any other sculpture that is in the orchard, and nor is it any other frame. And so these fundamental differences contribute to our sense that we're having an experience that's different than other people's. And so we begin to seek a teaching because we want to reconcile this. At least in my case, you know, I wanted to be able to experience some kind of oneness, but I also didn't want to lose my unique sense of self. So there's a koan I want to talk about that sort of illuminates this in a different kind of way. And that's case 27 in the Mumunkan. It's a koan that's also reappears in the Blue Cliff record in slightly different form. So it goes like this. A monk once asked Master Nansen, "Is there any dharma that has not yet been taught to the people?" Nansen said, "Yes, there is." The monk asked, "What is the dharma that has not been taught to the people?" Nansen said, "It is neither mind, nor Buddha, nor beings." So the question is, how could there possibly be a teaching that has not been taught yet? And then, if we accept that that's true, what is this teaching that is neither mind, nor Buddha, nor beings? And another way of framing this question is, how can we have a teaching that doesn't end up falling into some trap or another? You know, one versus many, thinking versus emptiness, me versus a frame. So I would say that this is kind of the problem of teachings, and it comes up many times in other koans. So to explain this, let's take a look at what we're talking about. Big red frame. So a frame is a noun. We know what it is. There's a definition, right? The definition is something like it's a structure that surrounds or encloses something. It could also be a verb. And you know, because we have this definition, we can share an understanding of what a frame is. And then once we learn the context of this frame, whether it's a frame for a house or a frame for a picture or a frame for an idea, we can get, you know, an idea of what I'm talking about. But my guess is we would probably conjure up very different images of that frame. When we get to the adjectives, in some ways, it gets even more complicated. So, big. What's big? Big compared to what? Is it a big frame compared to the frame on your shelf? Is it big compared to the frame of a house? Is it compared to an ant or a mountain? There's no big without something that is less big or more big. What about red? Well, we might think that we have more agreement on that one because we all know what red is. We learned that color when we were children, and we could all point to red probably on a piece of paper and say that's red. But first of all, you know, we have in a kind of extreme case, and there may be some people here, of people who are have red-green color blindness, right? So we know that some people don't actually see red the way many other people do. But even if you don't go to that extreme, maybe you've also had the experience, I've had this many times, of like arguing with someone over what the color of something is, right? You know, is that like an orange or is it a red? Is it a purple or is it a blue? And so it's clear, not that people learn these colors wrong, but that we actually experience the colors differently. And so I would guess that if we all at this moment sort of conjured up an image of a big red frame in our mind, and we could somehow take a snapshot of that image and look at them all together, not one of those images would be the same. And so what's clear is that this big and red and frame are our concepts for us in the same way that the self is a concept. Are we talking about a physical frame, like the body? Are we talking about the contents inside the frame, like the mind? What is the self? Is it both of those things? Is it the story we tell about ourselves? None of that exists. So getting back to the koan, what is the dharma that has not been taught to people? Well, I'll tell you. I am not a frame, and neither are you. It's because we are alive. And that reality, the fullness of that reality, is beyond any language of mind or Buddhas or beings. And not only that, because we are alive, we can act. And with that, as humans, we can practice. And so if we sit and observe the contents of our empty mind, and if we get stuck in our stories and ideas, we can let them go. At first, our range of activity might not be great. But over time, I think we all find that our practice gives us more flexibility and greater possibility in our activity. And so we can know that we are both not separate and our own unique person. And I think this is what it means to be a bodhisattva. It's not something that we have to try to be. It's what we are. So in closing, I'm going to share with you a verse. This is by Su Tang Po. He lived from 1037 to 1101. So that's about 200 years after Nansen gave his great teaching. And it's called "Inscribed on a Wall at Thak Nutch Mountain's East Forest Monastery." Okay, so it's talking about Thatch Hut Mountain. And it's inscribed. Seen from one side, it's a ridgeline. From another, it's a peak. Distant or near, high or low, it never looks the same twice. If I don't recognize the contours of Thatched Hut's true face, here's why. I'm right in the midst of these mountains.